Good morning.
Morning.
I am Justice Bill Meyer, and I'll be your head of panel today. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. To my right is Justice Bonnie Suddeth, and to my left is Justice Kerry Fitzgerald, who's visiting as a visiting judge with us today. And so we will be ready to start if the clerk will please call the docket.
The court will now call Julia Hecker versus Clyde Hecker. And may it please the court, Mr. Robert Alden to argue for the appellant, Ms. Donna Hernandez to argue for the appellee.
Counsel.
May it please the court. As stated, I'm Robert Aldrich here for Julia Teresa Hecker in this matter. I guess nobody likes to be ordered to pay money. And I believe at the top of that list is probably being ordered to pay money to your ex-wife and her lawyer. That's what we've got here. Fortunately, the law does not allow a person who does not wish to follow the orders of a court to escape and or thumb his nose at the court, which is what's happened here since the very first proceeding. The very first proceeding here was a divorce that was tried in December or in the fall of 2013. After that case was tried, a separated tort trial for negligent transmission of a sexual disease was tried in September of 2014, a jury came back with a verdict in that case of what is now about $400,000. After the jury came back with that case, and after, even though Clyde Hecker appealed, but he never paid his fee and he just dropped it, we started the collection process. That was onerous. We had to go back to court and back to court in order to get him to comply with the simple things such as post-judgment discovery. But that was the pattern established in the divorce case. He didn't want to pay his interim lawyer's fees there, so he was in handcuffs one day. So it was no surprise. We get to the turnover order, and there is a second case. There's an anti-transfer case that's in Judge Birdwell's court in the 352nd. It runs parallel with this one, but we filed our transfer petition. At the transfer hearing, I put on evidence that showed that Clyde Heckert had in his possession, in fact, just over $1 million at one time or another. But the main focus of the transfer hearing was a Fidelity account, which has north of $700,000 in it, that was claimed to be exempt under 420021. And that's where this argument really is. At that hearing, there was no evidence adduced by Mr. Hecker that account was anything but a normal account. Now, he tried to tell the judge that it was in fact a tax-exempt account, as is addressed in 420021, but when objected to as hearsay about his knowledge about the account, that objection was sustained. In addition, when he tried to testify about what type of account that was, the condition surrounding that account, i.e. that it was in fact a protected account under 420021, he was not allowed to testify because he was not qualified to testify about that type of account. And the judge properly did not allow him to testify to that effect. So at the end of the day, there was absolutely no evidence in the record that account at the Fidelity was anything more than an unprotected account. Now, The statute is clear since at least 2011 that the debtor has the burden to establish the protections. And that statute was changed in 2011 to specifically indicate that by the use of the words, the use of the words in the statute. Before 2011, however, there are cases and cases out of this court that say the burden is on the debtor. And there's the Supreme Court case of Buller, and Buller clearly says if you are trying to establish something, then you have the burden of bringing forth the evidence under 420021. And then there's less the case of, that came out of the divorce, the case that, that was the divorce case where the wife got overpaid and she went to federal court. American Airlines was trying to get back her money, and the court, federal courts, she admitted in there it was an overpayment. And then in the lower court, when it came down here, to American Airlines was trying to get back their overpayment, she didn't put on evidence that it was in any way protected. In fact, she put on evidence just to the contrary. Now, that evidence was that she didn't own an interest in the money. So the court held again, the debtor has to prove. Once the creditor proves that the money is in the debtor's possession, then the burden shifts. And the only case out there that has really any bearing on this that was decided at any time recently, but not after 2011, is that Lozano case out of Houston, which is cited by Mr. Heckert. And in the Lozano case, there's a Rucker case that the 14th Court decided before Lozano. And in Rucker, the court said the law as it was. Now, this is pre-2011, but the law, the Rucker court says the burden is on the debtor. The debtor's got to prove that he gets some sort of exemption or protection, whatever one wants to call it.
Was there any evidence as to the type of the account?
In which case?
The name of the account.
In which?
In your case.
Yes. The only evidence was that it was called a 401k account. That's exactly right.
Did someone call it an IRA account?
I don't know if they called it an IRA. I remember them calling it a 401k, and I objected, and I said, well, I don't care what he calls it, Judge, as long as you're not admitting that to go to the substance of what the account is.
Said it's an IRA account.
An IRA.
You said he shouldn't be testifying about it being exempted, and the court sustained it. So my question is, pre-2011, it says if a person has an interest in, and then it lists a lot of types of accounts, including IRA, then it's exempt unless the plan or account is not qualified, right?
That's the unless part of the statute, yes, sir.
Today it says the same thing, except it adds a few accounts, and then it says to the extent that income tax is not paid on it or something about deferred taxes, okay? My question is, if you have evidence that it's an IRA account, as this record apparently does, and the statute says IRA is exempt, is that some evidence that the husband account is exempt?
I don't believe so. I don't believe that, because you can call it anything. If they wanted to call it a tiger account, they could call it a tiger account. It's still testimony. Objected to. I mean, there's two ways to go at this. Either I made my objections to hearsay because all he was testifying off was a document. He didn't know how it got there other than what documents told him. And then number two, he didn't have the background like a CPA would have to testify as to how the machinations. Was it a trustee-to-trustee transfer? There's no evidence of that in there.
Is there evidence in the exhibits or in the testimony that, as to the source of the money that went into the account at Fidelity?
There's no exhibits that address the account that were admitted that have anything to do with it. The only testimony he testified to was that he thinks that was money was part of his Plan B account. But there wasn't any, and it couldn't have been, because American closed the Plan B account down before we ever finished the divorce. So there wasn't any Plan B even at the end of his divorce in 2013.
Wasn't any Plan B, but the money that was in Plan B, according to your opponent, went into the account that you're trying to get paid out of, isn't it?
No, it did not. I know it didn't. I know exactly where it went. But and it didn't go to there, and there wasn't any testimony or any documents about where it came from. That's my point, I guess. In any event, there's absolutely no testimony, and the Lozano case doesn't help anybody, because A, it's a pre-2011 case, and after 2011, the statute was changed, and it's not an unless anymore. It's is. It has to be is. And the courts have consistently said that the burden is on the debtor. Lozano had to get around, and I'll go back into it, but they had to get around Rucker. And they cite Rucker, and they cite the correct proposition of law, and then they say, but we got to get around it. If you look closely at Lozano, what you see did not happen is exactly what happened here. Nobody objected to Mr. Lozano's testimony. Mr. Lozano testified this is a 401k, and he put into evidence the documents. He put into evidence all of the, I think, nine confirmations that he'd gotten from the account or from the account holder of the financial institution. He testified that, yeah, this is a 401k or an IRA, whichever the case may be. Nobody made one objection to that, either based on hearsay or based on the fact that he wasn't qualified to testify to that. So I think the 14th Court had to do something if they had all this evidence in there, and so they went exactly with what Justice Fitzgerald's saying. It says, well, it is. They said in their opinion specifically, everybody recognized, and clearly this is the part, and admitted that this was a protected account or words to that effect. So Lozano worked in that case, even though they had Rucker before it. And Buller is the Supreme Court case that says clearly that the burden is on the creditor to
the initial identification of this account as an asset in the possession of Mr. Hecker would have been your burden.
That's correct.
And how did you meet that burden with evidence?
Well, first off, we showed that he was the one claiming the account. He claimed the account. He claimed it was his account, and he claimed it was in his. It was in a long exhibit. I think it was exhibit 21 or 22 that I had admitted that he had claimed an interest in the account. And so that was in evidence there, and then there was interrogatory. The interrogatory, I think, said the debt hadn't been paid, but it was clearly tied to him, and then, of course, tied to him by his own testimony.
Did you introduce any evidence, written evidence, about the account?
I don't know that I introduced any written evidence about the account, other than I know that he talked about an account at Fidelity. And he was allowed to talk about an account being at Fidelity, and the account was identified that way. But we didn't introduce written evidence that had any kind of an appellation, any kind of a characterization on it.
So all the evidence about the account came from Mr. Hecker?
I don't remember that. I think we might have had something. I'd have to go back and look, but I don't remember at this point. If we did, it's in this brief, and I just forgot it this morning. In any event, those are the two reasons that you don't get to we get to get the account. There's no evidence that it was in any manner protected. Same holds true for the other two accounts brought up by Ms. Hernandez or by Mr. Heckert. Those are the Vanguard account and the R2 adverse, risk to adverse accounts. I mean, there's the arguments there that there's nothing there to protect them, and there is nothing there to protect them. They were ordered to be turned over. There's clearly no testimony about that either of them should have been protected, other than we had to have a charging order for the other accounts, which I don't believe to be the law, and we set that out in the brief. The last issue I had, Judge, was I turned in an affidavit for some $25,800, I think, in lawyer's fees, and the judge gave me $10,000 of that under that Ragsdale case, I believe it is. The Ragsdale case says if it's clear and uncontroverted, then you get what you testify to. They had months and months to controvert that affidavit. Nobody ever controverted the affidavit. Thank you.
May it please the court. Mr. Aldrich talked a little bit about how no one likes to pay money. That's true. Some parties also don't like the state of Texas law, which is that retirement accounts are protected and always have been and always will be in the state of Texas. Now, there's really three major issues in this case. The first one is the 401k. Now, that's the Fidelity account that the court did not order turned over. As a matter of fact, he scratched that out of the order and did not allow the turnover of the exempt 401k account. The second issue is the IRA. Now, that's the account that is designated at Vanguard. Vanguard's misspelled, but the Vanguard account is an IRA, and that is an account that the judge did order was turned over. And we believe the evidence shows that that was an exempt account that should not have been turned over. And then, of course, the third account has to do with the partnership interest, which the Texas Business Organization Code is very clear on, that the exclusive remedy against partnership accounts when you've got a judgment against a member is a charging order. And that was entirely ignored by the trial court, and he ordered the turnover of those partnership accounts, or excuse me, those partnership interest, not the accounts. Now, the evidence was pretty clear. The court had tried this divorce, and Mr. Aldrich wants to debase you talking about this messy divorce. Yes, it was messy, and it was long, and it was ugly. And this sexually transmitted disease was HPV. It wasn't something terrible that he's leading me to believe. But if we talk about the divorce, Judge Hennigan tried that. He knew the issues. He took judicial notice of the entire file, and it went back to 2010, long before my time. Mr. Aldrich told you there was no evidence, but in fact, the evidence before the court was they had the divorce decree. Mr. Aldrich introduced the divorce decree, and the divorce decree awarded 50% of the retirement benefits in Mr. Heckert's Plan A at American Airlines. 50% of that was to Mr. Heckert and 50% to Mrs. Heckert. He was awarded 35% of his Plan B and 100% of his IRA. Mr. Heckert also had evidence of the inventory from his divorce. Mr. Aldrich actually introduced that. The inventory said Plan A and Plan B under the retirement accounts were retirement accounts. And the inventory in evidence said the IRA was listed as an IRA under the IRA accounts. Mr. Aldrich introduced Clyde's discovery responses, where he listed all these accounts and claimed them as exempt. The Vanguard statement was in evidence. The Vanguard statement says this is a traditional IRA right at the top of it.
Define that.
I'm sorry?
Define that. What's that tell you if you say traditional?
Actually, Your Honor, I somewhere in my brief, I gave the definition of an IRA, and it might take me a minute to find it.
It's in your brief. I just missed it.
Okay.
Did you define traditional IRA in there?
I don't think I defined traditional.
Traditional is the word, the key word. I got sidetracked, and I didn't get a chance to look at it myself.
Yeah.
If you don't know off the top of your head, forget it.
I can't answer that. Now, as the court will recall, though, in the course of the testimony, that issue came up with regard to an IRA, and that's where Mr. Altrich said, whether it's exempt is, if he's not testifying, if you're not talking, taking that means it's a tax-deferred account called an IRA. I have no problem with that. Everyone who practices family law knows that an IRA is an exempt account. Mr. Altrich stated during that hearing, if it's called an IRA, that means it's a tax-deferred account. There's an admission right there that that's exactly what it is. Clyde testified that it was an IRA. Now, what happened was the court didn't act on that motion immediately. Our position was, before I jump ahead, Teresa did not enter any evidence at all to satisfy her burden under 3102. She did not introduce any evidence that these assets could not be readily attached, but she also had to bring forth evidence that it was not exempt from attachment, execution, or seizure. So it's really easy to jump over here and say, Mr. Heckert had the burden to prove that it was exempt. But under 3102, they've got an obligation to come forward to even get a turnover order of any sort. They've got a certain level of evidence that they've got to bring forward, and they simply didn't do that. So we get into the evidence, and Clyde testified that his Fidelity account included his American Airlines Plan B. He testified that after the divorce, he was left with about $32,000 in that account. He testified that he continued to contribute to that account as he had prior to the divorce, and that those contributions were within IRS guidelines. He testified that the Fidelity account consisted of his B fund that he received in his divorce and that was rolled over into his IRA. He testified about contributions that he had made since that time. And the trial court properly followed that evidence and found that that Fidelity account was a protected protected 401k and did not order its turnover. Now, as I listen to Mr. Aldrich's argument, it appears that he's arguing that in order for a judgment debtor to prove that one of their accounts is exempt, that judgment debtor, because as he says, has no expertise to testify about the character of their own accounts. First of all, even Judge Hennigan said, that's not right. We know what we have. We know if we have an IRA or a 401k. But even if you took the position, it doesn't make any sense from a practical standpoint. A turnover order can be obtained ex parte. That's been pretty well established through Texas case law. It can also be obtained with very short notice provisions, which is what happened in this case. That would put the burden of the judgment debtor in every turnover hearing to appear at court with a CPA or a tax expert to testify as to the character of his or her exempt accounts, because Mr. Aldrich's position is that a layperson can never testify to that. Well, that doesn't make any sense. If you can get an ex parte temporary turnover order against my client, how can he be expected to show up with an expert in hand in a matter of days to testify? Now, Texas law is pretty vague on procedurally how these orders go, and I think the case law is pretty clear that there's no set rule about how we do this. But what I do know is that Mr. Heckert could not be expected to show up with a CPA to testify about the character of his accounts on a few days' notice. It just doesn't make any sense procedurally. Sure.
401k is the Fidelity.
Yes, sir.
The IRA is the Vanguard.
Yes, sir.
If you looked at the IRA by itself in Vanguard, this is exempt because it's called IRA, and it's listed in that statute as an IRA. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
And it's listed also in one of those exhibits as, what was the word, traditional?
Yes.
Are those two items enough to get you there in your judgment?
And also because Mr. Heckert testified that it was an IRA, he attempted to testify that it was tax deferred and was not allowed to do so. And the court recognized that everyone knows what an IRA is.
Okay. Flip back to 401k. I asked your opponent about the sources, and he said the sources were not proved to be retirement funds. And I gather from what you've already said, there's adequate evidence in this record that specific retirement funds were placed in that Fidelity account, and that's his 401k?
Yes, that's what Clyde Heckert testified to. And if you look at the order itself...
What part does the divorce judgment and the proceedings before the trial court, before granting the divorce judgment, have to influence the position you're taking in this case? In other words, all the evidence that was before the trial court, before the division of property, and before the judgment, was that evidence in your, and by far as your position is concerned, does that carry forward within the court's defined record in ruling on the turnover order?
Well, I believe it does, and I believe Mr. Aldrich thought it did, too, because he introduced all that evidence at the hearing, and the court specifically stated in the record that he was taking judicial notice of the entire file.
All right. Thank you.
So our record has all that?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at the turnover order itself, you can also see that the court heard this back in February, and then he didn't rule on it until sometime in May. And I do think things got a little bit fuzzy during that time period. He took the order that Mr. Aldrich had presented, and he specifically marked out the Fidelity account. He specifically marked out the American Airlines pilot retirement or pension program. As you can see, the order that was presented to him was attempting to attach everything. But then it gets even more fuzzy because he grants the turnover of the Vanguard account, but there's no statement here. And honestly, I don't think Judge Hennigan realized that was an IRA, because I don't think he would have turned it over if he'd realized it. None of these accounts are designated by account number or anything specific. All the Texas case law says that a turnover order has got to be specific. It's got to tell us exactly what needs to be turned over and what doesn't. But if you look over at H and I, he ordered that he turn over his interest in any other non-exempt financial account and in all other non-exempt property. That's not specific at all. That doesn't tell Mr. Heckert what he's supposed to turn over. That leaves it to Mr. Heckert to decide what's exempt and what's not. And all the case law talks about how it's got to be specific. So the order in general can't be, it's not enforceable. We think the whole order is voidable. We're asking the court, though, that the order be reversed, and that the only thing in the order that I feel like needs to be affirmed, because I think the evidence was before the court, is that the Fidelity account is in fact exempt and should not be part of the turnover order. And thank you. I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't hear you.
Did you do anything after you saw the Vanguard?
Yes, Your Honor. We filed a motion for clarification, and the court did not hear it.
Mr. Hernandez, counsel argued that there was no opposition to the affidavit filed in relation to the attorney's fees on the question of the $25,800 affidavit. What's your recollection of the record, and what do you remember you did?
I did not file any opposition to it. Didn't think I needed to, and I think that's clearly, according to the case law, within the court's discretion in ordering attorney's fees.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Counsel, you have rebuttal, Mr. Aldridge?
Just a little bit, Justice.
I don't know why the decree being introduced into evidence is supportive of Mr. Heckert's position. I introduced that decree to say here's was the status of the property at the time of divorce, and there was no fidelity account in there, and there was no tracing anything from the decree forward to the fidelity account as held today, other than Clyde's testimony over my objection that he said, well, his 35% that the judge left him in that plan B ended up in the fidelity account. Nothing other than that, that was objected to properly. So there's nothing funny about it. It's just you have a starting point and an ending point. I had a starting point of a decree of divorce and an ending point of a fidelity account that holds assets. There was no evidence ever adduced that the Vanguard account or that the averse to risks accounts were in any way, in any manner, protected. None of that was. I mean, it wasn't ever brought up until later that somebody thought it was a 401k. So I don't know how we get here today and we have different evidence that's being talked about, because it didn't happen that day. We introduced 21 exhibits of what these accounts were called. I did a summary exhibit of 22 at the end and had everything totaled up. Those were all admitted into evidence, and that's what Judge Hennigan based his ruling on. And this statement that everyone who practices family law knows it's a tax-deferred account, you don't have to practice family law to know it. I mean, everybody knows, okay, I know what a 401k or an IRA is supposed to be. But that's the rub in this case, and that is there's a huge leap from saying, okay, I know that's called that, and I know that that is that. Because it's kind of like... How do we get from point A to point B? You can call it anything you want. If you want to call it a 401k, then that's where we get back into the Internal Revenue Code, where the definition is whether it's an IRA or 401k. And if you want to shield money, you might call it a 401k or an IRA and try to sell it to people. But if it doesn't meet all of those criteria set out in the Internal Revenue Code, which is the basis of where we get into 420021, then if you can't show it, then you can't call it that, and you're not going to get to keep it in the case of a turnover statute, or you're going to get to defer income in it in the case of trying to keep from paying taxes on money. A simple way to look at it is, like, if you don't prove it was a trustee-to-trustee transfer and what that means, then you're not going to get to keep it. Just because you call it something is not going to help you. Thank you.
Counsel, for your argument. And your case is submitted. And you're excused if you choose to be, or you can stay if you want to.
Thank you.